Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the latest edition of First Down Snapcast. I'm your host, Richard Butler. Joining me tonight, live from America, is Jay Haygood. How are you doing, Jay?
I'm doing good, like yourself.
Really good. Just off back of a nice Father's Day weekend. It's good, good start to the week. We've got nice weather. It's
yes.
All good. It's all good.
Yes.
So, Jay, I was doing a bit of digging into your college and NFL and your experiences, and so you were at Virginia Tech. Now, when you were at Virginia in the early 90s, it was quite a few good players there, quite a bit of a tough crowd to get going in Virginia. How did you find that from transitioning from where you came from high school into Virginia Tech?
Well, you know, coming from South Carolina and playing high school football there, football in South Carolina is really big. So, and then I went to my last year of high school, I went to Fort Hugh Military Academy, where it was, you know, a great place to play. And then getting to Tech, you know, we didn't have the best year my freshman year. So it was, you know, it was one of those things where all the redshirt freshmen got together and, you know, made Coach Beamer promise to take him to bowl games. And so my class is actually the class that started the bowl streak.
Yeah, it was definitely. Everyone you speak to always have different. Some people like to go to the big colleges and the ones that where you know you're guaranteed it's all going to work out for you. Some colleges don't get many players drafted from, and Virginia's always one of them what's always had a good mix of players, and there's been so and it's always not always been they've not always been a top college, but they've always had a steady flow of players into the NFL, and they've been renowned for that over the years. And did you find that in like it was in the coaching setup, how it was built at Virginia, that they were just always there to get the best out of the players?
Yeah, well, I think a lot of guys that, you know, that stayed in the state of Virginia back then, because in the mid 90s and early 2000s and up into the mid 2000s, up to 2010, a lot of guys from Virginia stayed in, you know, stayed in state, either they went to UVA or they went to Virginia Tech. It was, I think, you know, it was crazy because a lot of the guys from down south, football is totally different. And so it's like a religion. So we kind of had to help them understand that, you know, this is a part of our life. You're going to get an education, but, you know, this is something that, you know, we live by. Yeah.
Definitely. So after you finished your whole college career, you went to San Francisco, New York Jets in 97. And
yes,
how was that signing for the Jets at the time?
Actually, when I came into New York, you know, it was Bill Parcells' first year in 1997. So it was the year before, I think they went 1-15. And so signing as a free agent, you know, it was more of a business deal as a free agent to go somewhere, you know, that was rebuilding. Mm-hmm. And it was, but that market that, you know, being in the New York market was, it was really tough even coming in as a rookie, because the news media there is that they're brutal. So everybody sucks to them.
You're not the first person to label the New York media as a bit of a harsh crowd to get involved with.
Exactly. But coming into there, you know, they released a lot of guys. They actually released 19 guys from the year before. So again, you know, Parcells basically had broke this team down to where it was less pressure to make the team, because the team was already developed by the time we got started with training camp.
Okay. Obviously, an offensive tackle. So was there much experience in that position when you arrived? Like I said, because obviously all the changes, there was a lot of high players were moved on and they were like the rebuild. So was it kind of a bit of a fight for the OTs from the rookies and the free agents? It's like you fight for it for the position and it's yours, kind of.
Yes, exactly. And the good thing is for me, I had a great mentor, Jumbo Elliott, who, you know, he had been in the league probably maybe, you know, 11 years, 12 years at that time. So he, you know, kind of mentored me. And then he basically, that old line, because they were older, they mentored a lot of the rookies that came in as offensive linemen. So, and that was the big thing. And like, even with the draftees and the free agents, you become close friends, because you don't know, you know, NFL stands for not for long. So you don't know how long you're going to be there. And so everybody, you become a close-knit family when you're rookies, because, you know, you're in a different place. It's just like starting college all over again.
Yes, definitely. I can imagine. Obviously, it didn't last long in New York and a brief move to Miami. But one of the things that stuck out is, You came to Europe and you enjoyed playing over in Europe.
Yes, I actually loved it. So it was crazy. I was telling my wife, I said, I played football 3 years straight. I went from Miami to Frankfurt and back to New Orleans, and then from New Orleans back to Frankfurt. And then I went back to New Orleans, and then I ended up coming to Berlin. So, but I really enjoyed the fan base that was over in Europe at that time. So people don't understand, like, the fans in Europe are more loyal, you know, like they're into the sport, and it was more of it's hard to say, like, I had never seen concerts before a game, and you know what I'm saying, the festivities. I mean, we have tailgating, but there it was like a festival every Saturday.
Yeah, we are. I know if you've ever seen international games that are in London, it's more of a carnival thing. So you've got a bit of tailgating. It's not one like in America. We've got a bit of music on before the game, a bit of music halftime. Mm-hmm. But it's like a mini Super Bowl in a way, all crammed into one. Mm-hmm, yeah. The European League, which is a shame really, because I think if the NFL had pursued with it around the time of the late 90s and kept pushing it, the international, and obviously about the franchise thing, would never have come about, and the NFL Europe would not be seen as like a place where players go to finish. It'd be like it would be like the step up. It's the alternative to college into the NFL, kind of for European, like for European and other players from around the world.
Yes, and I played with a guy named Vernon Hipler, who played in NFL Europe first, and then he played with the Chargers, and he was a great guy. And there were so many guys that I played with that was from the German community, from England, as a matter of fact, because we had Bill House. He was from London, and he played wide receiver. A great wide receiver, but doesn't get a look because he's in another country. And I think a lot of times the NFL, you know, unless you come to college here, they miss out on a lot of players that are, you know, say, in the European leagues.
Yeah, I think they're trying to address that nowadays with the international development program, where they've got players getting, it seems each year division gets selected to have a different European player on the team, and they get around it by saying it, you can have him in additional to the 53-man squad, and they're going to go on a practice squad, so you don't effectively have to cut a professional guy for one of these European rookies. So I think they're trying to definitely build it on there. But in that that 2000 season in Frankfurt, it was a bit of a roller coaster. And like I said, the atmosphere, the fans let you know. Like in America, sometimes some of the stadiums can go a bit like quiet mid games, but they don't in Frankfurt, do they?
No, never. Never in Frankfurt. It was never, even the 2000 season, I think we broke even. I think we went 5-5, but you would have thought we were undefeated every Saturday. So the fan base in Frank, especially like Frankfurt, it really grew. Like it was, because then you have the American military bases there, and then you have a lot of people that are into American football. So you're looking at 60,000 people in a soccer stadium. And you can't even hear yourself think. I didn't realize how loud soccer stadiums were. I mean, you're in the stadium, can't even hear yourself think.
No. I can imagine that being an American going over, you're a bit skeptical, thinking, yeah, I'm going to get some game time, but is it just playing like a bit college football kind of thing? You don't know what, it's a bit of an unknown walking into. Was it for yourself or?
Yeah, well, you didn't really know until you got to meet the guys that had been there previous. And the good thing is we had Mario Bailey my first year. Well, he was there my first 2 years. And with Mario, he had been there for a few years. So he was like, you know, being in Frankfurt, Frankfurt was probably, you know, one of the best places to play, you know. And he was like, you know, he said years before it was either the London Monarchs or Frankfurt. That's where you wanted to be at in those two, you know what I'm saying, cities. So, but being in Frankfurt, you know, he kind of, you know, when you find out you're going to NFL Europe, you know, at first you're down, you're like, man, I've never been to another country. I had never been out of state for a day in my life. And I was like, I ain't know what to expect. Am I going to like the food? And for me, the good thing is I had two cousins that were in the army over there in Wiesbaden. So I got a chance to, you know, visit with them and have family close. So it was it. But as far as atmosphere and learning, it felt just like college because you were going into a setting that you wasn't ready for. So it was very, I underestimated the excitement in NFL Europe. I did. I underestimated. I just thought, go over there, play a little bit, come back, get on the squad. Yeah. But the first game, I never forget, we played the Berlin Thunder, and I was like, we ran out. So, and this is in warm-ups. We ran out just to stretch. It probably was 40,000 people sitting in the stands. I was amazed. So it was a good time.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Because like you see, I've experienced a few games in America and stuff, and no one really gets to the seats until the game's about to start because they're all out tailgating. But in a European game, they're all sat there as soon as they get the ticket in. They're sat with beer and hot dogs. It's stand waiting.
Sat there
viewing everything going on in practice. I hope he's not playing. He's not pulling his weight, and they'll let you know straight away.
Yeah. Well, and the craziest thing is, like, even being at practice, I know in the NFL, you know, they kind of close practice, but I know in Frankfurt and Berlin, our practices were actually open to the public. So there'd be 1,000 people at practice. And I'm like, this is amazing. Like, you know, people would take time out of their day just to come look at guys that, you know, they don't even know about.
Yeah.
So it was very, very impressive. Very impressive.
Yeah, it's definitely impressive. And it's really good that this past weekend, the European League restarted. It's been given a backing by the NFL, and it's got a few of the originals, Barcelona Dragons, Frankfurt Galaxy, Burning Funds have all started up again under them names, which is, it can only be positives for not only NFL, the football in Europe, but for the NFL in the long run.
Yes. I think it's going to take it, just like how the NFL Europe started off as the World League and then, you know, transitioned to NFL Europe. It's, you know, the NFL is going to be patient and let it take time, just like the NBA done with, you know, with their D League and their G League. It took, you know, people didn't realize those leagues were in effect back in the mid 80s, but you never heard about them because you were just only, you know, people don't realize that's where Dr. J came from. So that was back in the 70s. So those are things that people, you know, with the NFL, that understand it has to take time to grow because there are so many great players that play, you know, in Europe. So many, like you see the guys and then they're so fit and you're like, man, what have I been eating? So, you know, it'll change your life and they're so strong and it's like, man, I mean, what am I doing wrong? So, but I think with the NFL, it's going to take them, they just need to be more, instead of looking at it as a bad situation, the owners need to take it as a, you know, as a way to send players there to develop, to get better. And come back and be ready because every 21, 22 year old is not ready to go against a guy that's, you know, 28 years old or 32 years old. Those are grown men. And some of the, you know, some of the guys that come out of college, they're still kids. So that, you know, having, you know, basically a minor league for the NFL would be awesome.
Yeah, I think you're hitting the nail head on there a bit about the step up from college to NFL. Now, normally your first rounders are ready for the NFL. It may be the majority of the second rounders, but then you drop into later rounds, and I think it's been brought up on a few programs before. Even training camp can break round three picks onwards because you've got the veterans fighting for the place. You've got these free agents who have been cut from other teams. And you're this young kid out of college who's got maybe a fourth round draft pick. Potentially, come end of August, you've been drafted, but you might not even make a team.
Exactly.
And you're coming off based off your competition where, at your college, some players are good, but everyone in the NFL is elite because especially the veterans who've been there years. And they're like you say, it's a not for long league and they're giving everything possible to stay in it as long as they can.
Exactly. Exactly. And I tell people all the time, you know, NFL Europe saved my career. You know, a lot of guys, you know, they get that one or two and then they're done. But, you know, me being, you know, making the decision going to NFL Europe and then having such a great coach, you know, like Coach Curl and Bob Bicknell, who, you know, he's the offensive line coach for the Auburn Tigers here in the States now. These are guys that, you know, but they coach in the NFL eventually. So, you know, you get a great, you know, you get a lot of good hands-on because, you know, there you're able to practice longer. You're able to, you know, do drills more because it's, you know, you watch film and you break down the film, but it's more concentrated. I know when we were there, more concentrated on your skill set, on working on things that say that you're not a great run blocker. So you get a chance to work on that while you're in Europe. So
in regards to going to the Europe side of the league, did you have much of a say, or was it, you're going to NFL Europe to play? Is it kind of, were you told to go, or were you given the opportunity?
No, there was more of a sale because, you know, they wanted to develop, you know, especially when I was leaving Miami. They, you know, my agent had spoke with, you know, the offensive coordinator at the time, and they were like, you know, he need to develop his run block. And, you know, it was, and they actually said Frankfurt would be the best place for me to go at the time because of, you know, Coach Curl loved to run the football. Him being a BC guy, so he loved running the football. So it was a perfect setting for me because I was like, that's something that, you know, being in college and then, you know, playing with the New York Jets, only thing we did was throw the football. So I was used to pass blocking. You know, my quarterback in college was a first rounder. So every time we, you know, we may have ran 20 plays and run plays, but for me, they didn't have to really sell it to me. It was a sale, but it was, you know, helping me understand what I needed to work on. So,
and do you feel from going to NFL Europe, you got more out of it than sitting on a practice squad?
Yeah, I got way more. Yeah, because even the 1 year that I spent with on the practice squad with New Orleans, I got a chance to work, you know, a little, you know, work in the offseason a little bit more. But see, the thing is, when you're actually playing in the game compared to just going and running somebody else's plays, it makes the world a difference because I can go, if you show me a script, hold up a card, I can run that play. I can, you know, make the adjustments, block and all that stuff. But now if I have to learn a specific, you know, offensive setting, then I have to adjust to it. So I think the NFL Europe experience was way better.
That's really good. Is that going into? We'll go bring back around to NFL nowadays. How do you see like your former teams? New York Jets seem to be in rebuild mode again. Miami, a lot stronger. They played really well last year, and former teams. It looks like New Orleans are in a complete rebuild, and it's the post Drew Brees era. And it. Myself, I'm a New England fan, so obviously we're in the post-Brady era. It's looking a very long tunnel at the moment. Is the potential for that to happen in New Orleans, do you reckon? But it could take a few years to come back to where they want to be.
Yes. And I think, like, you know, looking at the teams that I played for, I think Miami has done a great job drafting the past 3 years. New York, they have to, the biggest thing for them, they, you know, they built the offensive line, which is great. They finally got a quarterback. Now we got to see what he can do, because he's had, they've had the receivers and they've had the defense. So now we just got to build off of offense. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then with New Orleans, with, you know, Drew Brees calling and, you know, calling the quits, it's start from ground zero. So you don't know where that, you know, where they're going to land this year. So
yeah. And they're about to cut a lot of people because they were treading very fine to that salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of
yep.
Just going back to that Miami drafting really well. Also, it upsets me quite a bit as that being a New England fan. But not only drafting very well, they seem to might have pulled the wool over Houston Texans with a trade as well.
Yeah,
might
yeah,
have been the exactly. Greatest trade ever.
yes. I think it's like right now with the NFL and with the whole NFL. The trading and the drafting, like now it's so people, guys are like, you know, like nowadays they're like, well, I'm not going to play. I'd rather get traded. And then they'll get traded somewhere else. You know, but, you know, years ago, you know, back in the 90s and early 2000s, you done that, you just got cut and you went home until somebody picked you up. So you don't want to play, we just cut you. So,
yeah, I think if you look at some of the stories and plays, like I say, from the 90s, either resigned. You played your contract, mm-hmm. You ran your contract down, then you hoped in off season you can impress someone up to sign you. There was none of this, like you say, blockbuster trades. I'm going to sit on bench until you trade me.
Exactly.
I was proving it last few years with like Le'Veon Bell sitting out because he wanted more money. And his career's gone really well since doing that.
Exactly. Yes. Let me sit out and then I won't play again. But I tell you what, I played with, and you know, going back to NFL Europe and how it really developed guys. Like I played with Jake DeLone, and me and Jake actually, you know, played together in New Orleans. And like that is the prime example. You know, everybody always talk about Kurt Warner, but people don't realize that Jake DeLone actually was the third string quarterback in New Orleans for years. And then he goes to Carolina, becomes a starter. Now, mind you, the whole time he's in the third string quarterback, he spent 3 years in NFL Europe. He would go over and play and come back and be the third string quarterback. I mean, he, you know, busted his tail, and then we came with a starting quarterback. The first year he took the Carolina Panthers to a Super Bowl, although they lost, but he took them there. So,
yeah.
I mean, and that's where people don't, you know, I think now a lot of teams are starting to see where, you know, they may pick a first round pick, you know what I'm saying? And he may not be ready. He may have great numbers, but he may not be ready for that caliber of talent. So, you know, you send them over and let them play and get used to, you know what I'm saying? The game is so much faster in the league. Everybody in college is strong. And you got a couple of people that's really fast, but everybody in the NFL is strong and really, really fast. Like, they're not slow. So, everybody's fast.
Yeah, it's I think, like I say, on that example there, it gets overshadowed because Kurt Warner won the Super Bowl. So, he's the most famous NFL Europe player because he won the Super Bowl.
Exactly.
But if he'd won the Super Bowl at Carolina, Jake Long would be mentioned just in the exact same level as Kurt Warner.
Yeah, exactly. And then you have Vinatieri, who was the kicker over in Europe for a long time. And people don't realize that he spent 3 years over in Europe and went to, you know, finally New England gave him a shot. And then, bam, he's probably, you know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. So there are a lot of guys that have come and taken the time to, you know, go over to Europe and, you know, readjust their game and become better. Yeah. Because you're still playing against the same type of caliber of players. Like, you're not playing against, you know, some Joe Small off the street. So, you know, the talent is still good.
Yeah, you've got your raw European talent, and then you've got all these American players who are going over because there's enough room in the NFL, because obviously there were even 32 teams when NFL Europe was going around. There's even less, so even less spots mm-hmm. to fight for. And you had your choice mm-hmm. of cap going up to CFL or go to Europe. But I think, just going back to you mentioned Adam Vinatieri, I think he's been taking age tablets or something, because he feels like he's been playing for as long as I've been alive.
Yeah.
I'm 36 this year. It feels like he's been playing forever.
Ever. He does. It does. Because he's this, like, you know, he's made so many clutch hits and, you know, kicks and stuff like that. But it just seems like he's been with, you know, different teams and been with, especially with the Patriots, and like he's been with them for 20 years, and I'm 47. So,
yeah. It was New England and Colts. That's it. But he's been around for that long.
Yeah,
I remember that.
That is correct.
After you finished playing, Jay, did you ever fancy getting into any kind of coaching with regarding the NFL or in college?
Well, I ended up coaching in NFL Europe. I coached with the Cologne Centurions. So, you know, that's when Barcelona left, Dragons left from Barcelona and came to Cologne. And I ended up coaching with them for 2 years. And then I ended up, during that time, I was even a high school coach. And the craziest thing is I was a defensive coordinator at a high school in Virginia, defensive coordinator, not even offense. and I did that for about 6 years. And then from that point, I moved back home for a while. And then I coached at the middle school that I played at back home. And I had been there the past 5 years till I left 2 years ago. So I coached a little bit because I feel like, for me, I always wanted to coach younger kids because the aspect of it is, you know, I had a coach that always told me, you know, it's hard to coach younger guys unless you've been there. You know, he was like, you know, I can't really tell you how to get there. I can help you get there, but I don't know what it takes to stay there. So, you know, having the knowledge of, you know, telling kids, you know, there's a lot of sacrifices you have to make. There'll be things that you don't want to do. You may have a family. You may have to leave them for, you know, 4 months, you know, and go to Europe, or you may have to play in the CFL where you're not making a lot of money. So you have to have, you know, 2 or 3 roommates. So, but I've always wanted to work with younger kids, and that's why I do a lot of off-season training and things like that here in the Raleigh, North Carolina area. So it, I still have football in my blood. So I kind of, every time I try to get away from the game, me and my wife, we laugh about it because I said, every time I say I'm not going to do something, next thing I know, I'm doing 10 football camps. I got new, you know, trainee kids. So it's amazing. You try to get away from the game, but it never leaves you.
No, I can imagine. It's obviously we love it over here, obviously, but it's your Sunday game. It's your church in America. And like I say, you can't escape it. No matter how much you try, you know, there's always a way. It's like, oh, can we come back, do this? And you get stuck back into it.
Exactly.
But at least you're back home doing it closer to the home and family, because I spoke to a few people before, and the downside of the coaching job sometimes is you've been away as a player for maybe 5-10 years from your family, and then you go straight on the road coaching and you're away again and you miss your kids growing up and everything. So it's such a big commitment after finishing playing to going into the coaching with the teams in college and NFL, because you're always traveling and you're based so far away from family. You don't always want to move your family, do you?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I tell people all the time, like, as a player, you know, I thought we put in a lot of time, you know what I'm saying, practicing, lifting weights, training, stuff like that. And it's an 8, maybe 10-hour day. But as a coach, you're looking at 14, you know, 16 hours a day. Because when I went back over, I was like, man, I didn't realize y'all done all this. And they were like, man, we don't get home till 12, 1 o'clock in the morning. We're back over here at 6. And it's, you know. So that was a lifestyle. Those 2 years that I, you know, worked with Cologne, I was like, man, this is really, you know, I tell people all the time, if you're going to get into coaching, you better have a good woman that's going to stand by you and wait for you, because you're not going to be at home at all. So.
Excellent. So just quickly as well, Jay, obviously from Carolina, how do you fancy Panthers this year? Darnold's arrived from your old team, Jets. Do you think it could be a good fit for him?
Yeah, I think it is. And plus, and you know, and then that market is a great place to play because of the atmosphere, because you're getting the taste of Southern football, because the further south you get, you know, it's just like, you know, there are certain areas up north where football is big, like Pennsylvania, but it's freezing up there. So, you know, I wouldn't want to go up there. but I think he'll be a good fit. And I think that, you know, with Carolina has the ability to be a great team this year. Now it's just up to the coaching staff to put everything together, I think.
Yeah, it's definitely, from the outside perspective, the NFC South, it's Tampa, but it's a fight for that second spot, which could be playoffs, but it's better to be at the front of that queue. And I think Carolina, what they've done, Atlanta have just got rid of Julio, so that's one weapon gone. Saints have lost a few, so there's a good chance for Carolina. Brought in a steady, good quarterback. He knows some of the receivers from his time in New York. And obviously, a fit Christian McCaffrey is going to help.
And he's, you know, now him being a veteran, he's turning it on. Like, he's just keeping Christian McCaffrey. He keeps getting better and better and better. Like, I'm like, where's the end to this young man? Like, he's just, you know, every year, it seems like even every game, he's, you know, he performs even better. So, and I'm talking about with a mediocre offensive line. So, you know, he doesn't have, you know, the big name offensive lineman. So, you know, he's doing a great job. So.
Yeah, and he's straight in there. There'll be a scrap for him in the first round of fantasy drafts, I'm sure, in the next couple of weeks. Everyone starts drafting the fantasy teams.
People are going to be paying a lot of money to get him in the next couple of weeks.
We did a few drafts last year, and I think he went in the first two picks in about seven drafts, did McCaffrey. Oh, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
You need your running backs. Because a few people have jumped quarterbacks, but you need to go running backs first. They get your points.
Yeah. Well, you got to get your points first. I tell anybody, especially in fantasy football, you go for – everybody want a quarterback, but I'm going for a running back. That's what I'm doing. I'm going for running backs and wide receivers. That's what I'm doing. So I'm going to get my wide outs first and my running backs, and then I'll look at a quarterback.
Well, there's 32 of them. One of them is guaranteed to start. So as long as you get a couple of throws to your wide receivers, you've got points. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's been a pleasure, Jay, to chat to you tonight and to get insight not just into the European side of how your career went and how it benefited you in your coaching career going forward. And it's been a pleasure to hear that.
Oh, man, I appreciate you having me on, man. I was so excited that you invited me on. And I was, like I said, you know, with the new European League, you know what I'm saying? And it just, you know, just brought everything back together, because this year will be 20 years since we won the World Bowl. In Dusseldorf. So this is very exciting.
No, it's exciting times, and we're looking forward. Fingers crossed, touch wood. The COVID's lifting, so we'll get the international games back in London. We've got two of your former teams, the Jets and Miami, coming over. And the prospect, the NFL have put the tender out to go to games in Germany next year. It's exciting times in Europe for NFL fans, and it's great to have been able to speak to you, Jay. If you've lived the journey in Frankfurt and Berlin and Cologne on your return.
Okay, thank you so much, man. Thanks for having me.
No worries, right. Anytime, Jeff. Thank you.
No problem.
Cheers. All right.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Sports Social Podcast Network.